a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's, of course, the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights. For a couple of centuries, no one paid much attention to the Second Amendment, but in recent decades, it's become one of the most hotly contested parts of the U.S. Constitution. That debate comes to Washington State this November in the form of two rival initiatives on gun registration. Michael Waldman has written a new book called The Second Amendment, A Biography. Michael is president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. Michael says that the individual right to bear arms wasn't recognized by the Supreme Court until a 2008 ruling, and that phrase, a well-regulated militia, was really important to the Founding Fathers.
That was the case called Heller, and it was Justice Antonin Scalia, and he said he was just following original intent. In fact, he said this was the vindication of his philosophy of following original intent. Well, when you go back and actually look at what the founders were talking about, they really weren't focused in any meaningful way on what we're all focused on now, individual gun ownership for self-protection or hunting or any of this stuff that we focus on. Those militias turned out to be very central to their worldview. They're not like anything we have today.
It's not the army.
It's not the army, and it's not the National Guard. Every adult man, eventually every adult white man, was in the militia their entire adult life, and they were required by law to own a gun and bring it from home. And they saw this, among other things, as the principal bulwark against tyranny from what they regarded as the risk of having an army. A standing army, like what King George had, the Redcoats, professional at the command of the king. And these militias of citizen soldiers, if you think of Lexington and Concord and the Minutemen, they were the way to ward off that tyranny. So when I'm asked in talking about this book, well, so what is it? Is it an individual right or is it the militias? And the answer is it's both and it's neither. It was they thought they were talking about an individual right for the duty to serve in the militia.
Well, it also sounds like it was kind of a states' rights issue in the sense that you'd want an armed militia to fight off the federal government.
Right. That's what James Madison said, that don't worry if the federal government is tyrannical. We'll have a civil war and the states with their militias will win. It's an amazing worldview, and it was the very fear that the new central U.S. government created by the Constitution would crush those 13 state militias. That fear is what directly led to the Second Amendment.
So the debate over does it protect militias' rights or does it protect individual rights to guns? And as you just mentioned, you conclude the answer is both or neither. Why?
People had plenty of guns. They also had an expectation that they had the right to protect themselves, especially in their home. But in terms of what they were talking about in the constitutional debates and why they put that rather convoluted and comma-clogged provision into the Constitution, if you look at James Madison's notes from the Constitutional Convention, if you look at the ratification conventions with some scattered exceptions as they were wrestling with whether to uphold this Constitution. If you look at the debate in the Congress as they wrote the Second Amendment, there's not a word about it protecting individual rights for self-protection, for protecting your home. It was all about this military force. In fact, James Madison's original proposal for a Second Amendment had a conscientious objector clause saying if you had religious scruples about bearing arms, you didn't have to do your military service in person. You know, there were plenty of guns used for all kinds of purposes, but there were always, even in the colonial era and the early American era, there was always plenty of gun laws too. Sort of rights and responsibilities went together. It was, for example, illegal to keep a loaded gun in a home in Boston for safety reasons. There were all kinds of restrictions about who could own guns and things that might surprise people who assume it was this unlimited, unfettered individual right always, and that's what the framers really meant.
We're talking about the Second Amendment. It's the title of Michael Waldman's book. The subtitle is A Biography. So as you point out, the Second Amendment was kind of a non-issue for much of U.S. history. When did that change and why did that change?
Well, the country evolved. The militias sort of went away. We stopped showing up for them. They stopped being important and eventually stopped really existing. The country grew more individualistic. There were plenty of guns and plenty of gun laws at the same time. And courts never used constitutional provisions to strike down these gun laws under the Second Amendment. The Supreme Court ruled repeatedly otherwise. The conventional wisdom on the matter was expressed as late as 1991 by Warren Burger, the former Chief Justice, the rock-ribbed conservative appointed by Richard Nixon, who said that the idea that the Second Amendment recognized an individual right to unlimited gun ownership was, quote, a fraud on the public. That was the conventional wisdom. So what changed was the way we have constitutional change all along. In this case, the NRA and other gun rights advocates, including the Second Amendment Foundation here in Washington State, set out on a multi-year, actually multi-decade drive to change the way we saw this constitutional provision. The NRA at their annual meeting in 1977, it's called the Revolt at Cincinnati. Members voted out the old leadership who they felt were too moderate and voted in new leadership that was much more dogmatic and much more focused on this kind of constitutional crusade. Now, when you go to the NRA headquarters in Virginia, you walk in and there on the wall in the lobby in pride of place is the text of the Second Amendment, but they've edited it. They actually just edited out the part about the well-regulated militia.
Really?
They have two dots. They don't even have three dots, just two dots. And so they worked to change the way the courts and the public saw this, and they backed scholarship. They moved public opinion so that it became the consensus conventional view. They elected politicians and changed the positions of prosecutors and government agencies. And then and only then did they go to court. So by the time that opinion was brought down in 2008, it sort of fell like a ripe apple from a tree. It wasn't ultimately that controversial.
And apparently a huge success for the NRA and those who espouse the right to have guns, even following Sandy Hook and the nationwide revulsion against gun violence that periodically pops up. Even at the height of that, it eventually gets beaten back. And I don't know. I don't see any signs on the horizon that it's going to change anytime soon.
The country tends to go through these spasms of horror and remorse and then trying to do something after some highly publicized act of violence. It used to actually be political assassinations. A lot of the first gun laws at the turn of the 20th century were passed after the attempted assassination of the mayor of New York City in 1911 or the Kennedy assassination in the 60s. It spurred other gun laws. Now it's these horrible mass shootings. The gun rights forces, the NRA and their colleagues, they win not only because of their numbers, but much more because of the passion and intensity of their supporters. So that even after Sandy Hook, you had a background check proposal to strengthen the federal background check system. It was supported by something like 90% of the public. It was bipartisan, and it died at the hands of a filibuster in the Senate. Now, it did actually have a majority of the Senate, so that might be about the broken political system in Congress. But it was because of the intensity of the opposition as much as anything else. That very issue of background checks, of course, is something that's on the ballot here in Washington State. Interestingly, the arguments made about background checks really, generally speaking, don't touch so much on the Second Amendment because the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia and others said, yes, there's an individual right, but there can be restrictions on that right, the same as in any other right. And certainly one of those restrictions is who can – you want to make sure that only people who lawfully can have a gun can have the gun. And so the arguments on that stuff tend to be more about paperwork and or whether it works rather than that it tramples on some core constitutional freedom.
Michael Waldman is president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. His book is called The Second Amendment, A Biography. We'll see some of that debate roll out in coming months in Washington State. Maybe it won't be about the Second Amendment, but it will be about guns. There are two dueling initiatives on the ballot this fall. One would prevent background checks from Washington State gun buyers that are stricter than federal regulations. The other measure on the ballot that you'll see would require background checks on gun buyers. That's, again, they'll be on the ballot this November. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.